I'm trying to get harder and tougher mentally and physically every day of my life.
You're either the growth mindset or you're the fixed mindset.
If you're trying to be the best, you need to look at who the best is and see what they do.
Relentless pursuit of progress.
There's a difference between the best and the rest.
Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast.
Champions are built in the mind first.
Where we interview scientists, world champions, doctors, and experts in just about every area of health and fitness.
What do you care enough about? What are you fascinated enough about to go so deep and learn so much that you'll know more about it than anyone else?
And now, here's your host, Michael Cashew.
Hello and welcome back. This is Michael Cashew and you are listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. Today, I am joined by my good friend, Justin Sua. Justin is currently the mental performance and leadership coach at the Tampa Rays. He previously was with the Boston Red Sox, winning a World Series, and also the Cleveland Browns. His clients perform in the NFL, Olympics, PGA, CrossFit, US Army, MLB, everywhere you find high-performing athletes, Justin has been involved. He's also a two-time author of one book is called The Parent Pep Talks, The 10 Must-Have Mental Skills Your Child Must Have to Succeed in Sports, School, and Life, and also a book called Mentally Tough Teens, Developing the Winning Mindset. Justin is also the host of the Daily Increase Your Impact podcast, where he puts out little short bullets of wisdom. Justin is one of my all-time favorite guests. And in this episode, we start out talking about the Michael Jordan documentary series, which if you haven't watched it, what are you doing? It is amazing. It might be the most exciting documentary I've ever watched in my life because it highlights one of the most electrifying, high-profile, talented athletes in history in any sport. And what was most surprising was what was going on between this guy's ears, his mindset, the games that he would play in his own mind to manufacture motivation. And so we talk all about that, and it's just really cool to get his perspective because he works with so many of these sorts of athletes, and he also looks at things through a psychological lens. We also talk about the importance of focus and how that applies to his own life as well as those of the high performers that he works with. We talk about what it means to be a great follower. There's so much great information on what makes a great leader and what that looks and sounds like, but not nearly as much on what it looks like to be a great follower. And this applies to my own life as I, you know, try and surrender to Adi's leadership in different areas of our lives. And it also applies to anyone that works for an organization or works with teams in general. There are times when you will lead and there will be times when you are called to follow. So I think knowing how to do both well makes a lot of sense. We talk about creating vision and purpose and how to stay present to that vision so that when you're caught up in the mundane, seemingly mundane tasks, the day-to-day stuff, you can zoom out and keep the big picture present in your mind so that you enjoy it more, so that you give it more effort and more energy. And then lastly, we talk about if he couldn't fail, what Justin would do in his career. This was a really fun and eye-opening conversation, as it always is. And so I know you're going to love it. Without further ado, please help me welcome Justin Sua.
This episode is also brought to you by Jumbo CBD. If you're not already on the CBD train, then I'm sure you've at least heard of it before, because many people thought in the beginning that this was just a legal way to get high. And unfortunately for some of you, you can't get high on CBD. You can try, but you can't get high on it. On the other hand, it can help you sleep better. It can reduce stress and anxiety. It can be huge for pain relief and reducing inflammation. Personally, I've had knee pain for about 5 years now, and I haven't been able to figure out a way to get rid of it. I haven't figured out the root cause. I've worked with PTs and chiropractors, and I just haven't been able to eradicate it. So I have used some pain relieving techniques, and this is one of them. I've used Jumbo's Extra Strength 200 milligram balm, and it absolutely does not completely take the pain away, but it makes it manageable. It allows me to get into a deeper squat. It allows me to walk around and just go about my daily activities without feeling much pain at all. And whether that's placebo or not, I really don't care because I just don't feel like I'm in as much pain. I've also used their sprays, and there's a really subtle relaxing effect to the sprays. So that's pretty great. It's helpful for sleep and reduces a little bit of like a feeling of tension in my chest, which I often call anxiety. It's great for athletes and recovery. And some specifics and what sets Jumbo apart is that they have 100% natural ingredients, full spectrum CBD sourced from Colorado and Oregon. They have CO2 extracted oils that are, I think, safer. They have therapeutic grade essential oils in a lot of their products, third party lab tested, so it's legit. And they're one of the first CBD companies to post their lab results publicly. I also know the owners of this company very well. They're very close friends of mine, and I trust them deeply. Again, my favorite product of theirs is the 200 milligram extra strength balm. I've also used the sprays, but they also have drops and butters or ghee. I think ghee is like a butter type thing. So there's all sorts of different products, and they're offering you 15% off of anything in their store. And you can get access to that by going to jumbocbd.com and use the code BRUTE in all caps. That's BRUTE in all caps. A couple more things. So a huge plus of their sprays and drops is that they use MCT oil. So since CBD is a fat soluble molecule, it binds with this oil and allows for much more rapid and effective absorption of the actual CBD. It also has essential oils that add flavor, and they bring their own proven health benefits as well. With the muscle balm, since they use ghee as the base, again, ghee is like a butter type thing, the CBD is binding with the ghee fat, and it's able to be carried all the way to the bones. Ghee itself has amazing topical healing properties, and when CBD is added, the results can be pretty profound. So again, you can get access to this discount, 15% off of all of their products, by going to jumbocbd.com and enter the code BRUTE, all caps, at checkout. Go get them. Justin, welcome back to the show, man.
So pumped to be back, my brother.
Likewise. You know, you're one of my favorite people to talk to on here. Man, let's talk about the MJ series. I was so blown away by that thing. What did you think?
So many thoughts. To be able to peer into the mind of one of the most elite athletes in the world and to see the behind the scenes of what his mentality is like, what his expectations are like, the weight of stardom and of expectations. I was applauding after every episode. It was amazing.
Did you watch him growing up?
I did. I was, so obviously the technology and social media and all that was so different back then. Born and raised in LA. So the only time I really got to see him was when he played against the Lakers, because born and raised in LA, being a Magic Johnson guy myself, heard a lot about him, but yeah, I watched him. I did watch him back in the 90s.
So I want to bring up a number of things that I saw in the series that really stood out to me and get your perspective on them. So one of them, I think you posted this on Instagram, was his quote, one of his quotes that went something like, "Why would I think about missing a shot I haven't taken?" So I think all of us can relate to this in some way. We think about and worry about the speech that we have coming up. We think about the competition that we have coming up and potentially failing in some way. How do we actually tap into this mindset of not fearing the future, like MJ was so great at?
Yeah, I think whether it be MJ or David Goggins or Jocko Willink, or you listen to some of these elite CrossFitters and you hear how the best in the world think, a lot of people are just blown away. They're like, is this person a robot? Like, how do you develop that? And that's just not realistic. And some people hearing that those kind of thoughts, it's eye-opening because they think to themselves, I didn't even know that was a possibility. I didn't even know that was, you could possibly think that way or view the future that way. So it was neat because it opened up the possibility of thinking a different way, framing your future in a different way for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. To answer your question, I think the reason a lot of people fear the unknown or fear the future is because of that exact thing. It's that fear of the future. What if that story they tell themselves, what if it doesn't work out? What if I embarrass myself? What if I work so hard and I still come up short? Where I think the greatest in the world, and not just athletes, it could be designers or insurance professionals or parents or whoever it may be, they view the unknown with curiosity. And I think if you view the world with the unknown with curiosity, if you're curious about the unknown, you embrace it. You're willing to take a few steps into it. If you fear the unknown, you resist it. You turn away from it. So I think when I listen to Michael Jordan and I watch him, and then you think about Kobe and you think about just the best in the world, they have this insatiable curiosity to be great and to push the limits and to learn more, and this insatiable hunger to constantly develop. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where Michael Jordan was so good. Just constantly curious about how much better can I get? How far can I go? How far can I push people? And it was cool to watch.
Yeah, I've done a lot of reflection on this topic over the past probably 10 years, because I think that the way that I grew up, it developed me in sort of the opposite direction. I was praised for my intellect. I was praised for my accomplishments rather than for effort. And I think everyone around me was absolutely doing their best to support me and encourage me to grow. But I developed this this tendency to only want to do things that I was already naturally really good at. And I was, it's always been a big no-no for me to make any mistakes. Failure, like second place is an absolute failure. And so when I've developed this intense fear of the future at times. It was really eye-opening to see someone that is so focused on and just open to getting better and not worried about potentially making a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was most prevalent. I think that the most stark example, the most defined example you see is when he chose to leave basketball and go into baseball. Mm-hmm. He literally, at the top of his game, chose to go into a world. I couldn't imagine not playing baseball for 14 years and then going into pro baseball, not to mention double A. So for those who are not familiar with double A baseball, minor league baseball, those guys are beasts. They have major league caliber stuff. And he hit above 200, which people are like, oh, that's terrible. That's amazing. There are guys who have been playing baseball their whole lives who don't hit 200 in double A. So that was just such a feat in and of itself. And I think you're right. I think it's a combination of what we talked about before we started recording, our DNA, how we're wired, and our upbringing, how we are raised. And I loved what you said. I think earlier, have you been exploring yourself and auditing your own beliefs? I think a lot of us don't take time to audit our beliefs and audit what we do and audit where we spend our time. And as we take a closer look at it, we might realize that this no longer serves us. This is no longer a belief that we hold on to, but we've just kind of are adopting it and are executing off of it by default, just because we've always known it. That's what we were told, as opposed to doing what you're doing and pausing and saying, does this serve me anymore? Mm-hmm. And I like that practice that you do.
Another thing that really stood out to me is how he would play games in his own mind. He would kind of create these rivalries, whether they existed or not. And I'm also watching the Lance Armstrong documentary right now, and he did the same exact thing. They're constantly making enemies with other competitors in their own minds to manufacture motivation. What were your thoughts on that?
Framing. When I kept... That was the one thing that stuck out to me is almost every episode he would, Karl Malone, he got MVP, I'm out to get him. Charles Barkley, he got MVP, I took that personal. A Kukoc, remember when they played Kukoc for the first, they're going to be teammates. They didn't even know Kukoc, all of a sudden he has a vendetta for him. And Kukoc's like, I don't even know you guys.
I loved it, man. And
I love that. That just goes to show you the power of our frames. We can choose to design the frame through the lens through which we view the world, the lens through which we view parenting and our workouts and our business and our relationships. And it comes down to all of that. And Michael Jordan put on a clinic of teaching us how he frames things. And what it was interesting, a lot of people were saying, they would look at it and think, oh, he's so bad, or why did he do that? And Michael Jordan didn't care. Like, that's what I love about frames, is it doesn't matter. It doesn't need to be noble. Mm-hmm. It's your own personal frame. But my question is, what does that frame do to you? How does it affect you? In Michael Jordan's case, it took him to the next level and he went off. What do you say? He gave him 60. It made him give him, just score 60 points on him. That was his frame. It's not about feeling good. It's not about being nice, being kind. It's, what is your frame doing for you? And Michael Jordan knew himself, and he knew the frame that he needed to take him to the next level, and he did it. And I think that's a powerful lesson of what is your frame, how are you constructing it, and you don't need to worry about what other people think about your frame.
How might other people use some of that method, whether it's creating an enemy or just changing their frame? How can other people use that?
Yeah, I think it comes down to, again, that story you tell yourself. And we already have frames, and it comes down to being aware of it. Let's say, thinking just about the audience in general, it tends to be a fitness audience. I know the Brute Strength audience, who are awesome. I'm part of the tribe myself. But for example, what's your frame on nutrition? What's your frame on a certain diet? What's your frame on working out what's your frame on different CrossFit workouts? We have frames that we have, and depending on our frame, it'll affect our emotions. It'll affect whether we lean towards it or away from it. Now, if you have a certain part of your life that you want to enhance and get better at, one of the first places you need to look at the frame, how you're framing that thing, and other corollary variables to that frame. So if you want to get in shape, you can't just look at the frame of getting in shape. You got to look at your frame around exercise. You got to look at your frame around sleep. You got to look at your frame around nutrition, because one of those frames might be cracked. And the way you're framing that key component to fitness might be the reason you're not achieving getting the results that you want. And so I think it starts out with identifying what are your frames, how are you viewing them, and what would be a more efficient / effective frame around that thing. And what I love about frames is it's kind of like clothes. You could test it on for fun, see how it works, see how it fits, see what it feels like to you, and you're going to find the one that works best for you and just run with it.
Help me with this example. Let's say someone wants to lose weight, but he or she has just continued to struggle, and he keeps, I don't know, every time he starts to get close to his goal, he self-sabotages. And then he tells himself, oh, I can't do this. So his frame is, I can't do this. I can never stick to my diet. How does one change their frame?
Yeah, that's a really good, some of these frames are strong. Some of these frames, like we talked about, or you just talked about, can even be formed from birth. It could be shaped from mom and dad, our society, even our culture, the gym we go to. Everyone has that frame, so you adopt that frame. And just like that neurological, that there's a phrase in neuropsychology, neurons that fire together, wire together. And the more you fire those neurons, the more you fire that frame, the stronger it becomes, to the point to where it becomes almost a shackle. And step number one is what you just said. It's just that awareness, being able to admit to the frame that you are ensnared by. I don't even know if I've ever said the word ensnared before.
Nice.
Number two is being able to identify, okay, what is a better frame? And to know, okay, and not only what's a better frame, what are the behaviors that are corollary to that frame? And a lot of times there's that phrase, what do you call it? There's a phrase, I don't know if I'm making it up or I heard it somewhere, do it until you believe it. Do it until you believe it. Sometimes you need to navigate around the frame and act in contrary to your, even though you don't believe it, mm-hmm. do it. For example, if you're like, oh, I always give up on myself, how would you normally respond? And then do something a little bit different, just to shake the frame a little bit. If you want to give up at 10 reps, give up at 11 reps, give up at 12 reps. Just say, I'm going to go to 12. We said 15, but I'm going to go to 12 because I was going to give up at 10. And it comes down something as subtle and as simple as that. And then doing it over and over and over, starting to crack away and chip away at that frame and the corollary behavior. Even if you do something completely different, any kind of variation to how you normally think or how you normally act, you start chipping away at that frame so that you can create a more flexible, more effective frame to be able to help you out. It's a long process. As you know, there are no quick fixes. As you know, you need people around you who can help you, who can help you hold yourself accountable. And even worst case, and not even worst case scenario, I don't want to say that, even therapy, even talking to a psychologist, talking to a therapist or a counselor, having someone help you navigate through these cognitive biases and navigate through this negative self-fulfilling prophecies. There are people out there who can help you, but ultimately it's you helping you. And it starts with that self-awareness.
Yeah. One thing that I learned early on in Alcoholics Anonymous was the concept of acting your way into better thinking. You know, a lot of us try to write it out or just overcome these beliefs and stories in our own heads. And we try to just do all of the work in between our own ears. And that can definitely take us to a certain extent. But the other approach is to actually start behaving differently and your mind will just follow.
I love that concept. It connects and correlates with something I've been thinking of a lot about lately is I've noticed in myself before where I'll read a lot of information. Let's just use fitness. Let's say I read about fitness. I watch fitness videos. I look at fitness clothes. I grab the best shoes. What I'm really doing is procrastinating doing the one thing that I really need to do, which is to get into the gym. Go run. Just go. Don't mm-hmm, care how you mm-hmm. look. It doesn't matter what my foot strike is on the ground. Like, go. And I think it ties right into what you're doing. I think a lot of people, including myself, we could kid ourselves thinking that we're taking action by reading the latest book and studying, when we really need to do what we really need to do is take action. And instead of not mistaking movement for productivity or mm-hmm. for action. And I think that's a powerful concept you just brought up.
Another thing related to this I've been thinking a lot about is the difference between, I call it passive learning versus active learning. I'm not sure if I made that up or not, but there's a huge difference in reading, listening, watching YouTube videos, and then actually getting out there and doing reps. The learning that takes place when we actually get out on the court, on the floor, in the exercise room is 10x. What it is when we're reading or listening to something.
I completely agree. There's just something about getting into the arena as opposed to being an armchair coach or armchair quarterback or being a keyboard warrior and telling people why they're doing it wrong or having our opinions. It's a completely different look when you get into the arena and you try it for yourself, because then you respect all the other warriors in the arena as well. Mm. Respect all the other people who are out there doing the best they can with the knowledge that they have. And it might not look pretty. It might not be polished, but to get out there and to do it, I agree with you. That's where the rubber hits the road, so to speak. And for myself as well. So it's one of those things where, hey, instead of reading something, try writing something. Instead of making a video or watching a video, try making a video. Instead of creating or consuming, try creating. And there's just power in learning that comes from all of that.
Did anything else stick out to you in the series?
Yeah. There's a lot of things. One of the things is just his high expectations for others and how sometimes it didn't even come out in the best of ways, but how people who want to pursue greatness, they almost seem unrelatable. And a lot of times they get really frustrated when people around them aren't at that level. And they'll do everything they can to try to push them to that level. And it is that fine line. Sometimes it's great. And sometimes it'll stress the people around that great person out. And I've seen it firsthand with some of the performers I work with, where the expectations for others are almost unrealistic, but they want to be great. And that's why they care so much. And so I find myself thinking like, for people who want it so bad and almost to where it makes them emotional and you can't fathom why other people don't want it as bad as you. When you watch that Michael Jordan clip or documentary, you end up realizing, oh, I'm not alone. And that was something that was fascinating. I've never seen that side of an elite athlete told that clearly, where you can learn that aspect from elite performers.
I love that, man. So MJ was like the master of focus. And I saw a quote that you put out recently, I think on Instagram, that says, if you want extraordinary results, narrow your focus. So that's one piece of this. Another thing swimming around in my head is this concept of the four burners theory. James Clear wrote about it a while ago. Basically, it goes like there are four burners in our life: family, career, health, and relationships. Something like that. We can only be good at three. We can only be great at two. We can only be extraordinary at one. We can never be extraordinary at four. That's how the theory goes. Sometimes we have to either dim some down or turn some off completely in order to put the amount of attention and focus that we need to put into the others that really matter to us. So my question to you is, like, I look at you as someone that is highly focused, highly committed to your purpose in life. And I'm wondering, what burners have you had to dim down or turn off in the process, and what effect has that had on your life?
That's a really good question. I love James Clear. I love his writing. I love his writing because when I read it, I find clarity in my own life, in my own self. I love following accounts and people who help me bring clarity to my own thought. First of all, I love that analogy. What have I done? I think part of focus, in addition to narrowing your focus, I think if you want to enhance focus, you got to learn what to ignore. And I think as I've gotten better and more experienced just in my life, I've become more aware of the shiny things that distract me. Early in my career, I would go after some of those things, whether and care a lot about them, whether it be early, like, I remember when Instagram first came out, it was the likes, it was the followers, it was all those shiny things. It was, what are people saying about other mental skills coaches? What are people saying about, it's like, who cares? And it got to a point to where it was just distracting me and it was tugging away at my emotions and my effectiveness and my clarity. And then I just learned on what to ignore and learned on things to focus. And so as you ask, in my field, what I do, I'm gone quite a bit, or I'm with my family and a phone call comes in, or I got to travel here or there. And it is very difficult, or those moments where, hey, I'm home. And when I'm home, I got to focus on truly being home. And I want to, as we talked about my kids before, I want them to be amazing at what they do. I want to support them. I want to be the best husband I can. And so I think I can see it turning it up, turning it down. I need to get sleep, but I want to make sure my health is great. But I can't I don't know if I have the time to get incredibly ripped and shredded that other people could spend 2, 3, 4 hours in the gym when I only have like 30 minutes. But then I can't make an excuse for not taking care of my health. And so it is a constant battle every single day or week to identify, okay, what do I need to focus on? What do I need to ignore? Where do I need to turn up the heat? Where do I need to turn down the heat? And I think in my experience being married with kids, I need to clearly articulate when I'm turning it up and when I'm turning it down to my family, meaning, hey guys, sorry, I'm going to turn it down on you. Not that. Hey, as simple as, hey, I'm going to be gone for a week. Let's talk on the phone every morning. Let's do this, have a family chat time at night, but let's create some other things to keep that fire alive so I don't just completely throw it off to the side, out of sight, out of mind, which I have done in my career before. Not good. I've learned from failure there. And then I've gone the opposite, where I've been working on the field and my mind's been so much at home that I'm not fully present with the athletes I'm working with. And so I'm dancing around the question because it's still messy. But yes, that I think that model is very, very helpful. I don't know about how many you can be excellent at, because that's arbitrary. What's excellent? What's not? How do you measure? It's different for different people. You might say you have an excellent marriage or family. Ask one of your kids. They'd be like, no, it's not so excellent.
Right.
Different opinions to that. But yeah, I think it is. It's definitely a dance.
Yeah, that's so refreshing to hear, man. Because me and anyone looking at you and your life would think, oh, this dude just has it completely dialed in all of the time, and it feels comforting to know that even the great people out there struggle with the same things.
I appreciate you saying that. It's definitely. I can bring my kids and my wife in. Yeah, we do not have it all figured out, and. I don't want to be over exaggerated and say every night, but a lot of nights I'll lay my head down on my pillow and look up at my ceiling and look at those things, one of those four burners, and saying, okay, man, I'm not doing very well in my career, or I'm letting players down, or oh, I'm letting my wife and my kids down, or I gotta tighten up, dial in on my nutrition and my health. Almost every day, there's always some kind of deficiency where I'm beating up on myself and thinking, all right, I got to step it up, which keeps things fresh, keeps me on my toes.
For sure, man. Yeah, I also have not quite figured this out. I feel like it's not a destination. It's a constant practice that we have to continue culling the things in our life that we're doing or thinking about that don't contribute to what really matters to us. One thing that I consistently ask myself is basically, what are the things in my life that I should stop doing? A lot of us think about what should we start doing, and then if we really reflect, we're just trying to do way too much and not putting enough focus or presence on any of them.
I love that. The three questions that I love, I think we might've talked about in a couple of the other ones episodes. What do I need to start doing? What do I need to stop doing? And then what do I need to keep doing? I think a lot of people, including myself, we won't catch ourselves winning. And we won't identify and say, oh, you know what? That thing I'm doing, that's actually working. That's actually helping me, or helping my marriage, or helping my nutrition. I got to keep that in there. And then continue to audit it, because that what works for you now might not work for you down the line, or what didn't work for you in the past, you might be able to pull it off the shelf. And in the context of your life right now, it might be exactly what you need to do. So I think constantly auditing those things, like you said, what do I need to start? What do I need to stop? And what do I need to continue to do?
I want to talk about what it means to be a great follower. Everyone talks about leadership. Like, leadership is one of the most popular topics in personal development, period, and business development. Not many people talk about what it means to be a great follower. But the fact is that there's usually like one or a few leaders, and the rest of the people are following. And one of my favorite things about the special forces, namely the Navy SEALs, is they say, ready to lead, ready to follow. And they want to develop the ability to like effortlessly and immediately switch into whatever the situation calls for.
Yeah.
So having worked with some of the highest achieving people on the planet, what does it really mean to be a great follower? What does it look like? What does it sound like?
Yeah. When you said that, I thought about my time working with the military, and I think about my time working with coaching staffs. And these are great coaches who've been around the game for a very, very long time. And whether it be football or basketball or baseball, there is a head coach. There is the man or the woman in charge who the buck stops with them. But what a lot of people don't realize is those head coaches are surrounded by elite staff, assistant coaches who are just as competent as that leader and just as strong personality as a leader and just as smart and bright and prepared as the one in charge. And one of the things that I've seen with the best assistant coaches is not only are they incredibly loyal to the leader and to the head coach, but what they also are serve as is they're not a yes man or a yes woman. Mm-hmm. We're just going to go and do everything you say. They think for themselves and they come to the table. Not only do they have a seat at the table, but they have an opinion and they have a thought. But the way that they produce or share their thought isn't in this authoritative, this is how we do it, or we should do it, boss or head coach or leader. It's posed with curiosity. What do you think about this? What about this? I think the best followers in the world are an extension of the leader. They are the eyes, they are ears. They are able to go around and see things that the leader might not see and to be able to explain things in a way a leader might not be able to explain it. And so when they come to the table to make decisions, I think the best followers already have identified problems in advance, and they have already come up with a couple of solutions for that problem. Instead of coming to the leader and say, oh, we got a problem, boss. They say, hey, I noticed this problem, and here are four opinions that I have on how we can possibly solve it. Mm. Instead of bringing all or dumping our problems onto the leader's lap, I think the best followers are taking things off the leader's plate as opposed to putting things on the leader's plate. And that's who great leaders want to surround themselves with. In addition, I think great followers develop, and I'm thinking about coaching staffs, and again, it's all contextual. They have such a good relationship with the leader, and they know the leader so well that the leader gives them permission to say things to them that other people might be afraid to say to them. Where the leader might be a tyrant or come off as too honest or a jerk for some people. I think a great follower is able to catch that leader at the right time and say something and articulate it in a way that will make the leader say, pause and reflect and say, you know what, maybe I do need to make a change, because they respect that follower. And so again, I've never been asked this question before. I've never even thought about it, but again, I'm just kind of riffing on this one.
No, this is great.
Great question. Great question.
So this is something I've thought a ton about, because having led multiple organizations now, I need critical feedback. That's the only way that I can grow as a leader. And it's been really hard to solicit that feedback, because people are afraid to be constructive, be critical of their boss, right? No matter how many times I say it, no matter how many times I ask, there's still some level of fear. And we've done some really formal things, like I've done a 360 interview where someone else interviewed them and they were able to give anonymous feedback. That worked tremendously. I'm wondering, what systems do people put in place, or what habits do they have that make it easier for followers to give feedback to the leaders?
Yeah, I think a couple of variables to consider is, number one is how. Like, there are a lot of, whether it be 360 feedback, whether it be everyone writes it down, whether it be a formal process, there's that part. Another one is research is showing the strength of the relationship. How comfortable has the leader created an environment of psychological safety? Does the person feel safe? And a lot of times it's just unbeknownst to the leader. Maybe the leader, I've seen places where the leader is literally doing everything he or she can to elicit critical feedback, but the people still don't want to give critical feedback. And the leader is literally saying, give it to me. Like, right. I have an open door, but, and again, that comes down to personality situations. Maybe they have had their hand bit before. Maybe they see it. Maybe this is a trap, or who knows? I don't know. A lot of it is contextual. One thing that I've seen interesting is a lot of times a leader can elicit critical feedback by giving themselves critical feedback in front of the person. Just say, do you agree or disagree? Is there anything you want to add to it? A simple example is when I once saw at a military base, a leader give a training on cleaning your weapon. Everyone in the military knows how to clean a weapon. Everyone knows how to do it. So the leader's doing it. He's talking about it. When he's done, he puts his weapon down and he pulls out a notebook and he goes, all right, guys, now we're going to get feedback on the way I just taught you. I thought I was a little bit, I struggled with this and I think I was unclear here. And he just went down the list and he picked himself apart in front of everybody. And I'm observing this. And then I see some of the platoon raise their hand, like, yeah, I agree with that. Or maybe you could have done it this way. Or what about instead of that, what you said, what you could do is you could do this. Where the leader's like, hey, what could I have done in this section? I think I was choppy in this section. And then now everyone is helping this leader, in this case, it was helping him solve how he could have made it better. And so you could extract the principle is maybe you give yourself feedback, not you, but the people, leaders who are listening to this, giving yourself feedback to show people that, oh, you don't even think you're perfect. Okay, oh, that's what you are viewing as your critical mistakes. And sometimes people don't want to give feedback because they see the leader as so good and so nearly perfect that their eyes aren't even trained to see it. I think we see even with elite athletes. You can watch an elite athlete swing a bat or a quarterback throw a ball. If you're untrained, you'll look at it, you're like, oh, that looks good. But if someone has a really good trained eye, they'll be like, yeah, that actually wasn't good. That was sloppy.
Damn.
And so, yeah. And a lot of times it's not that they don't want to give feedback. They don't even have the eyes to see what they can give you feedback on. That's why elite performers love elite coaches, because they want someone who has the eye to see. And I think a lot of followers, they've just been following by default and haven't even trained their eye to be able to have a critical eye to look, because they've never even been at that level before.
That is huge. I love that. Another one seems to be something like they may not have the vocabulary to express what's really going on. It's like a lot of times I think it's just a tension, like an emotional tension. Like I felt frustrated when you did X. It's not like a direct, you should do this better, but I just felt bad when you did it this way. And one thing that you said really jumped out at me that really resonates is the psychological safety is so key. What I realized in my own leadership is that I was expecting other people to be open and vulnerable with me without me doing it first, and without me really being like a good friend, like a real human being, you know what I mean? And as soon as I started to just connect with people just a little bit more, it started coming. And it wasn't like a flood, like all of a sudden. It just takes time. Relationships take time. Trust building takes time. And when I got patient and when I really started to focus on connecting with people, it started to come out.
Oh, I think that is so powerful. And yeah, you're the one who brought it up. I think it's we can't underestimate the power of relationships and taking the time to build that connection. You hit the nail on the head. I think the strength of connection and strength of a depth of our relationship, from that flows creativity together. I think critical feedback is enhanced. I think focus is enhanced. You just could do more together, but you're right. It comes down to paying the price to build those relationships. And part of paying that price is being vulnerable. I think Brené Brown said it. I don't want to butcher the quote, so I'll just paraphrase. Essentially, is a lot of times she says, we think, I'm empowered when I see vulnerability. It gives me strength, but I don't want to be vulnerable myself. I want you to be vulnerable. But she says that the reality is you have to be vulnerable so that they can be vulnerable, especially if you're the leader, and then you could gain strength from each other. But we live in a world where it's like, you go first.
Yeah.
So that's a great point.
Do you know the bricklayer story? The three bricklayers?
Oh my
God. Well, I'm gonna repeat it on here because just in case other people haven't. So there were three bricklayers, and someone walks up to him and asks the first one, what are you doing? He says, I'm building a wall. I'm working my ass off to build a wall so I can feed my family. He goes to the second person. He says, what are you doing? The guy says, I'm building a house. He's like a little more empowered. I'm building a house. Walks to the third guy. He says, what are you doing? The guy has a huge smile on his face. He says, I'm building a cathedral for the Lord, something like that. So I've been thinking a lot about this. And I think you and I have discussed this a little bit, but I'm thinking about purpose and vision and the importance of being present to that vision, right? One of the first most important things that any of us can do is be really clear about the bigger picture behind what we're doing and where we're really headed. But then the people that actually take the time to do that, one challenge that they have is actually remembering what the purpose is in the first place. So let's dive into both of these a little bit. How does one go about developing purpose and vision in their lives?
I love this topic, and this has been something that's been on my mind a lot lately, especially during a time like this, what we're in, because what people are realizing and what people are experiencing is they are finding a lack of purpose in doing the things they normally love to do during this COVID-19. And now it's rocking them. They're like, wait a minute. I love to work out. I don't feel like working out. I love to read books. I don't want to read a book anymore. I love to fill in the blank, and they don't love doing it anymore. And now all of a sudden they're thinking, what is happening to my drive to execute the things I used to love to do? And so purpose and vision have been a huge topics with people I've been talking about during this time. The first thing I want to say, if that's any of our listeners, is it's normal. It is completely normal to feel those ways during this. But one thing that going back to purpose, you asked, how do you find or develop a purpose? My answer is, I don't mean to be trite and I don't mean to sound oversimplify it, but for me, it can almost be as simple as deciding. Making a decision right now based on what you have in front of you, what is going to be your purpose? Where I've seen a lot of people get stuck is if you talk to, we'll just call them purpose purists, they think that you have to have this huge, esoteric, grand life purpose, all-encompassing, my why for walking the face of the earth. You might have that, and that's amazing. I think that's outstanding. We have other people who come and will poke holes in that and say, that's a life journey. I won't know that till I'm 80 or 90. Like, who am I to say like what my life's purpose is? I'm not going to get into that dogfight. I don't care. Like, I think if you have one, great. If you don't, that's okay. Don't use that as an excuse to not. Some people don't take action because they don't have that big purpose. What I'm saying is, if you don't have that, try developing a micro purpose. And what I mean by micro purposes is people forget that your why or your purpose, it can be something you decide on. It could be temporary. It could be something that you have for this immediate. You can have a purpose for it. Be as simple as, you might not have a big purpose, but what's your purpose for listening to this podcast episode? Why are you listening to this? As you reconnect with that, that will enhance your focus on this. What is your purpose for working out? What is your purpose for sleeping better? As you connect a purpose for those things that you do, you'll be amazed on how much more power you have to do those things and how much more focus you'll be to do it. So again, I'm not anti big perfect, capital P. I'm all for it. Go for it. And also one more thing while I'm on this soapbox for a little bit, be aware when your purpose gets stale. A lot of people that I've talked, I'll give you a story. I was working with a player in the NFL and he was struggling, scuffling, been in the NFL for a couple of years. And we started talking about his why. I said, well, what is your why? If you're willing to share it, what's your why? And once again, it's personal. What is it? He goes, no joke. He says, it's to make it to the NFL. And he literally stopped mid-sentence. And I said, were you just going to say to make it to the NFL? And his eyes got big. He leaned back in the chair. He goes, yes, that's been my why since I was a little kid. And it was just a light bulb went off.
Wow. So,
no wonder. And he forgot that. It literally became stale. And I said, well, what did it used to do for you? He goes, and he told, it was story time. He told me how he would write it on his wristband. He told me how he would write it in his notebooks, get to the NFL, get to the NFL. And then next thing you know, it would drive him. It would push him. And what he ended up realizing, he accomplished it right there in my office. He created a new one. And the new one was something like, I can't remember exactly, but I think it was to hit a certain number in his next contract, millions of dollars, or to make the Pro Bowl. So he goes and he does it. He makes millions in his next contract. He makes the Pro Bowl. And we end up talking about it again. And obviously there's a number of different variables. But for him, what he attributes it to is freshening up his why. And another conversation we had about it was, is don't worry about wondering if your why is noble. I think a lot of times I was talking with a Christian athlete once. He's like, man, my why is to again, no offense, but to I'm not minimizing this for people who are Christian, but, oh, my why is to let my light so shine or something like that. And I looked at him, I'm like, that didn't seem like you like bought into that. And he goes, what? I was like, your why is to let your light so shine? And he goes, yeah, like that's my why. And I was like, and I asked him, I don't think that's your why. He goes, what do you mean? I said, that literally triggered no emotion for you. I didn't feel that. And he laughs. He goes, you know what? I feel the same way. I said, well, what do you want your why to be? He goes, something like, I think he said something like to be badass or be the best something. I forgot what it was, but it wasn't quote unquote the everyday Christian thing you'll see on the shirt. And he goes, and I said, well, why isn't that your why? He goes, well, do you know what my family would think about that? Do you know what people, I was like, you don't have to share this with them. Are you going to share it with them? He goes, well, I guess I don't have to. I was like, yeah, your why is yours. Whatever you wanted to do, whatever you wanted to trigger, have that be your why. And even if it's just for this season, maybe you change it next season, but have a purpose. But again, we talked about the flexible nature of it, personal. It could change. It can get stale. Sorry, this is a hot topic for me right now. I'm not hot, but a passionate topic of mine right now. And so I'll take a breath.
Dude, that's huge. I really, really love that. One question I think it could be useful for people is, you know, if you experiment with writing down your why, ask yourself, why is it that? And you might come up with no reason at all, which is okay. Or you might come up with a reason like, I think my family wants me to, or my church wants me to, or that's what I always grew up thinking it should be. Or it could be something super empowering.
I think that's a great point. And to also know, and we already used this analogy earlier on, that your why could be like clothes. I think it's better in this analogy, as we're talking about this, because just like clothes, you might have a shirt that you used to love to wear, but maybe it just doesn't fit you anymore. You have different clothes depending on the weather. The weather is going to dictate the kind of clothes you wear, or what you're doing is going to dictate the kind of clothes you wear. You can go into a workout with a certain why. Maybe my why is to give my best effort. Going to the gym, okay, to give my best effort. You go in there, pay attention to what that why did to you. And then maybe you go into the gym, you're like, you know what? My why is to win this workout. I'm going to win this workout in my gym. I don't have to tell anyone, but maybe you pick someone out, I'm going to beat them. I will beat them. Test that out. See what that does for you. Maybe, and you can just try different whys on for size to see if it works out for you. You can mix and match those things. There isn't one, you're not stuck with it for the rest of your life. Have some fun with it. Get creative with it. And there was a lady I was working with. She attached a why to her to-do list. She would trudge through her to-do list, hated it, and she attached a why to it. One of her whys was water the plants. And she put down on it, her why was so they don't die. And so she was going through it so they don't die. She's a very, as a matter of fact, person. You can tell she's very analytical, very algorithmic, binary. I do this for this, do this for this. And she ended up realizing that it just wasn't livening her up. So she ended up changing it. And the example she used was watering the plants. She ended up changing watering the plants. Her why was so they don't die. She changed it from so they don't die to make my house look beautiful.
Mm.
And when she changed it from I'm watering my plants so they don't die to I'm watering my plants because it makes my house look beautiful, it changed her attitude about doing it. She's like, just as I was watering them, I had a smile on my face. I was excited to do it because I was excited to make my house beautiful. And she laughed. She's like, that might sound so dumb, but that little change in frame, as we talked about, or my why, it affected the way I did it. And so it's just the power of whys. It's amazing.
That's great, dude. Such a great example. So the second part of this is, you know, a very small percentage of people actually take the time to do what we're talking about in the first place, to get clear about the bigger picture and why they're doing something. You know, and let's say someone gets really clear. They have like an insight or an aha moment, like I'm in this career because I want to show my kids, I want to be a great example for my kids so that they really go after their dreams, right? And someone like has this really clear insight. But then 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks goes by and they get lost in the mundane activities, the day-to-day. How does one stay present to that bigger picture so that they can bring the same level or as much energy and presence and attention to those tasks that eventually get them great results?
There's a common axiom in sports psychology: where the mind goes, the body flows. And another analogy we can use is the inbox, our emails. There are moments where we get an email, maybe we send ourselves an article, or we send ourselves a video, just to ourselves, from you to you. And you put it at the top, and life happens. All of a sudden, you never open it, but you know where to find it. It's in there. And then all of a sudden, life happens, and that thing at the top of the inbox just keeps getting pushed down, pushed down, pushed down, to the point to where it's almost out of sight, out of mind. And that amazing article, video, thing that you sent to yourself is buried by your interactions with other people. And what you got to do is, what do you do to bring it to the top of your inbox? All you do is either resend it to yourself, forward to yourself, whatever you can do to keep it at the top, or keeping your head above water, so to speak, to bring it to your attention. And I think the same holds true with our why. I think people go through this process to develop one. Some people go to take courses. They go to retreats. They have these life-changing experiences that almost even change the trajectory of their lives. And what do you know it? They go back to home and they forget it. I think it comes down to each one of us individually identifying how to remember it. What do we have to do? It might be journaling in the beginning of your day. I'm big with lately I'm on this environmental design kick, where James Clear said your environment is the invisible hand that shapes your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be as simple and as subtle as putting your why somewhere where you can see it all the time, by your bed, on your mirror, on your steering wheel. I mean, take a look at grocery stores. They're geniuses. You walk into a grocery store, there's a reason the bakery is in the front. Yes. For the smell to capture you. There's a reason they put eggs and milk, two of the most common things that you need to replenish most often, at the back of the grocery store to make you go through the grocery store to get it. They put children's cereal at kids' eye level so kids can grab it and reach it and give it to mom and dad. They put the sugary stuff, the candy, right at the cashier, right there, so you can get that little dopamine hit so you can grab it right there. They're genius. They are shaping the environment to lead us to doing what they want us to do without them even mentioning things or saying it. Take a look at your own environment. Are you shaping your environment, or are we shaping our environment that lead us to remembering our why or to forgetting our why? And I think that is a low-hanging fruit that we can use to our benefit.
Amen, brother. Another huge piece of environment is the people in it, right? We can either choose to change the people in our environment, or a better way to look at it is enroll them in our future vision or our purpose. And if that doesn't work, we can find other people who are living a life that inspires us and makes it almost inevitable that we stay present to our vision and our purpose.
I love that, especially this topic on people we live with is big, especially during this quarantine time. Mm-hmm. Quarantine season, we're taking a look at the people we're living with and who are around and our relationships. Because you learn a lot about the people you're with when you're with them all the time. And I don't know if we've spoken about this topic before, but again, I'm big into analogies. I'm big into imagery and symbolism. And a topic about an example I give with this topic is fountains and drains. And I don't know if we've spoken about this before.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So fountains and drains. Fountains are people who are fountains of optimism, fountains of perspective, fountains of knowledge, fountains of energy, fountains of positivity. These are people who, when you're around them, when you talk to them, when you listen to them, when you watch them, they lead you to wanting to be a better version of yourself. And then we have the drains. The drains are people who suck the life out of great ideas. They have a problem for every solution. It's this pessimist. They don't have they don't assume positive intent. They assume negative intent. They're the ones who say people are doing things because they're bad. They always have malintent and constantly complaining or making excuses. Now, I don't want to segregate people and say you're either a fountain or a drain. I think we all have fountain and drain moments. Mm-hmm. I think I could be fountains at times and I can be in drain at times. And we have those. I'm not labeling people in general, but there are people who have a natural propensity to be a fountain or drain for us. Now, then we get the question, Justin, what if I'm related to a drain? What if I'm surrounded by drains? What I love about the year 2020 is we have fountains at our fingertips in the form of podcasts, in the form of videos, in the form of books, in the form of FaceTime. Reach out to them. You may know fountains personally who you can reach out to, and you might have people you consider a fountain who you've never met. But every time you listen to their writing or you listen to their podcast or read their writings, they enhance your perspective. They trigger creativity. They help you feel like you could improve. And those are the people who I would say surround yourself with.
That's a great way to look at that. Another thing is that one of my beliefs is that the ultimate form of accountability is not only for ourselves, but also those around us. You know, friends, we can choose if they're just constantly a drain and not adding anything to our lives, we can choose to quite literally unfriend them. With family, it's not that easy, and it's not something that most of us ever would even desire. And so we can make it our mission to invite them into higher levels of consciousness, to invite them to become a fountain, right? And not forcing them or trying to convince them, but just inviting them through our own energy and through just consistently showing up as a positive light in their lives. And before we know it, we might have another fountain in our family.
I love what you said, because you remind me of one of my favorite quotes from Gandhi. I believe it was Gandhi who was attributed to saying it, be the change you want to see in the world. And I think if you want to nudge someone towards being a fountain, the best way to do it is to do so by example. And again, we might have somebody sitting on this, on listening to this saying, oh, well, you don't know my family,
right,
or you don't know my dad, or you don't know my mom. And yes, every situation is different. Every relationship is different. But one thing we know is that emotions are contagious. It's contagious. You could catch someone's emotion. A calm is contagious. Crazy is contagious. I think if the step number one is to be aware that you don't catch the drain tendency in your pursuit to try to change drains to a fountain, or help a drain changed into a fountain, that you don't become a drain yourself.
Right.
And I think understanding, a lot of times it just comes from, we might label someone a drain, but they think they're a fountain. So what do we do there? They think they're a fountain. They think you're the drain. And so it's just, I think it comes down to this understanding. I think Abraham Lincoln said, if I don't like someone, that must mean I need to get to know them better, or I need to understand. And being able to cure with curiosity and with not being non-judgmental, step into understanding their world by asking effective questions and not in an interrogator, why did you do that, versus help me understand that. I may be seeing something completely different, and to know that, hey, we might have differing opinions, but we don't have to bash heads about it. We could still respect and each other's feelings, but there's so many ways to cut this and go at it, and so many different scenarios. But I agree wholeheartedly with what you said. Being an example to the drains, or those who might be able to see it a more effective way, a better way to make it better for the entire team, company, organization, and most importantly, our own families.
That's a beautiful quote, the Abe Lincoln one, man. Okay. Lastly, just cause I'm so curious where Justin Sua is headed. If you knew you couldn't fail, what would you do in your career?
Have my own TV show.
Yeah. I
knew I could not fail, I would love a show where I have conversations like a Tom Miller, like something like that, but I don't know what it would look like. I don't know how it would be, but get back on television. So that was I was in broadcasting. I love the rush of the red light. When the camera's on I even noticed in podcasts, I'll say things in podcast episodes and I'll go back and listen to it and think to myself, I've never said that before.
That was good.
I've never thought that before. And the thing that brought it out of me was kind of this fear, this excitement that, whoa, people are listening to this. And it, because of the constraint, it's easy to get lost into the what if, and don't make a fool of yourself, and make sure you're giving the right research, and you don't know who's listening to this. So I have the constraint of that, which causes me in a conversation like this to be more fully present. And I noticed that when I'm fully present, that's when I learn from the person I'm talking to, like yourself. And also I'm learning from myself, because I'm able to articulate thoughts that are that I've never been tapped before.
Yeah.
And they're brought out by someone like yourself. And so, yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun to do it on television.
Well, the beautiful thing about something like you is that when you tell me that, I just have so much trust that it's going to happen.
We hope so. Yeah, we're constantly looking to how to make that happen. And that's one of the big bucket list things.
Right on, brother. All right, dude, this was phenomenal as always. Where can people keep up with you and find out more about what you've got going on?
I always send people to Instagram. At Justin Sua on Instagram. You can find my Twitter stuff there. My podcast is there. And so just go there. You'll find everything you need.
Awesome. And guys, if you haven't listened to his podcast yet already, they are fire. They're little short bullets of wisdom. Are you still doing them daily, or you were doing them really frequently?
Still every weekday.
Amazing, every week. Dude. Yeah. Amazing.
Thanks, bro. Thank
That's
you.
So badass. All right, Justin. Great to see you, bro.
Good to see you too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Your journey towards better fitness continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com to connect with Michael and his guests, access links and resources mentioned in this episode, as well as bonus content exclusive to podcast listeners. That's brutestrengthtraining.com.